when we fall into the trap that you have to have gone the conventional route to becoming an educator, there are voices that disappear. And those voices are probably what the world needs, whether the voices of young people or the voices of adults. I suspect that those are the voices we need to take on the challenges around us.
Welcome to Learning Unboxed, a conversation about teaching, learning, and the future of work. I'm your host and chief goddess of the PASS Foundation, Annalise Corbin. We know the current model for education is obsolete. It was designed to create fleets of assembly line workers, not the thinkers and problem solvers needed today. We've seen the innovations that are possible within education, and it's our goal to leave the box behind and reimagine what education can look like in your own backyard. Welcome to Learning Unboxed. As always, I'm excited to talk with another great set of innovators, in this case today, in the transformative education space. And joining us today is Nick Salmon, Mar Cano, and Aaron O'Reilly, authors of Team Ed. So Nick, Mar, and Aaron, welcome to Learning Unboxed.
Good to be here.
So great to be here.
Yeah, glad to be here.
So let's set some context for our listeners as we get started here. Team Ed includes a focus on teams in action, teams and transformation, and ultimately a call to action to grow individually and collectively as teams taking on some of the world's greatest challenges. And although this book focuses on the world of education, the group has often adapted the team exercises to team projects, business retreats, and community transformation experiences. The authors include insights from interviews of young people, educators, and community partners with team experiences stretching across six continents. So I will challenge them to grab that seventh, whenever they can. So let's dig in a little bit and just really sort of focus, I guess, if we will, about helping our readers understand the Team Ed interactive journey. So I'm not sure who would like to start, but if we could get sort of the 100,000-foot view of why this book and why now and why the three of you?
Maybe I can start since I'm the one who connected Aaron and Mara and I over the last 10 years. We had each had teaching experiences, which had sometimes been as a team, but often alone. And all three of us valued that experience of teaching with others and understood what contributions it made to our own professional growth, as well as to the quality of what young people that we were working with were able to do because they had more than one voice in the room in that time. And I think the last time I was on Learning Unboxed, I mentioned that one of the most revolutionary things that we could do would be to teach as a team. And it doesn't cost anything more to do. And yet most educators, the millions of us around the world, work alone. And we think that that's a shame, that, as I mentioned before, for our own growth, for the growth of young people, for facing the challenges around the world, that it's helpful to do this work in a collaborative way. So the book emerged from that. I mentioned that this has been going on for about 10 years, which is when I first met Erin. And she and I had done some work together and writing together, presentations, et cetera. And then about 6 years ago, I met Mar at a conference in Colombia. And in that week of being together, the idea of, well, why don't we write about this together? And the three of us, fairly soon after that, began our journey as a team writing. And it took us a while, as some projects do. To be fair, we had a pandemic. We had changes of location all through that time. And we really gelled as a team early on. And then it took us the time to write as we did.
That's fabulous. And I love it when groups come together, right? And that there's all these synergies that really give us a sense of, hey, let's do this thing or this work, or let's engage in this as a group, as a team. There's so much power in that experience and the work that we can do. Mar, I think it's super interesting that your background and work has spent a lot of time studying and thinking about ecosystems, which I think lends itself beautifully to the idea of working in teams. So I'm really curious, from sort of your perspective and your background, as you think about team ed, help us understand the sort of interactive journey components as it reflects to the work that you are so passionate about.
Well, I have to say that an ecosystem can be, you know, as big or as small as we want to think of it. Yeah. So let's start with the ecosystem that we created in Teams. Yeah. Co-writing this book was a great opportunity, you know, to think of that type of ecosystem we would like to see in the educational world itself. Yeah. So, from my very early career, I started, you know, working and enjoying by sharing my enthusiasm and my passion in English, you know. And so that was, you know, my first attempt to stretch my ecosystem beyond, you know, the classroom. So starting as a teacher of English as a foreign language in my own country and in Catalonia, actually, that gave me the opportunity to see that classroom walls were not the only one, you know, where teaching and learning could happen. Yeah, as Nick mentioned before, we've had different periods of time in our careers where we worked as in silos. But we've realized, you know, the power of teams, luckily. Yeah. So in that sense, I worked very much as the English specialist teacher in a silo for some time. But that was, of course, not something that I liked. And because I was very curious, I've always been very curious, actually. I moved around. I tried to visit, you know, other countries, you know, to see other type of learning and teaching in countries that were considered referenced, you know, in education at the time. So I decided to go to Finland. I had the opportunity, you know, to go to Green School Bali to see other ways of doing, to go to High Tech High, you know. So different learning ecosystems, actually, with very different mindsets and systems working and going on. And I have to say that one of the most interesting things that happened, for example, in High Day High, was to see, you know, how teachers were co-teaching, you know, in some way. And in the context that I had been in for long, I could see some teachers working in groups, mostly, not in teams, especially, you know, depending on the educational stage as well, primary or elementary or secondary high school. Yeah. So that was quite different. So we as a team, yeah, we wanted to see what it felt like to co-write a book in a collaborative way as a systemic group. And I think that we managed, you know, to transform us working in a group, in a coordinated group. And rather, we move to a collaborative team, right? And just to share, you know, some bits of the book we've written, we've had many sessions discussing, you know, the content, you know, chapters. And people ask, but Mar, what piece do you exactly, you know, write? Or how about Nick? Well, how about it? Was like, well, not exactly. It didn't work like that. So we all put together, we had our conversation. So learning is stretched and expanded in many, many different ways. Yeah. And that's what actually made us think, hey, this is really possible. And we all shared our experiences and we tried to see what systems and, you know, larger ecosystems in many different countries in the world. This is why we wanted to include voices from everywhere, not only our voices. So we moved from that individual thinking to the voices, to the collective voices, not only our voices, but you know, all over the world. There are many people who have this type of experiences that we wanted to highlight and emphasize.
Yeah, so that's fabulous and so desperately needed, which brings me to Aaron. So Aaron, as part of your work at the University of Montana, especially in the teacher education space around innovative teaching and learning, that's a heavy lift, right? Because in the U.S., as well as other parts of the world, in many teacher prep programs, we are still training educators to teach alone.
We sure are.
That is the default, right? And so we, PASS Foundation, for example, we spend a lot of our time retooling or adding to a trained educator's, whether they be a new teacher, a longtime teacher, to their toolbox to shift to being transdisciplinary and problem-based and fully collaborative, right? So that to get to that transdisciplinary space, we have to be all about the team. And yet the system and the prep system to get us into the system as educators is not set up, nor is it training or expecting us to teach that way. So, super curious about how you balance the ideas and the concepts in the book and the work that you, the three of you, are doing together with the day-to-day reality of the teacher prep work that you're doing. Because I think that that really sort of helps our listeners understand why we go down this road.
And I think that's so important. And I think about a couple different things with that. One being that we always talk about, you know, knowing your community, knowing the community that you're going into. So we're going to train you in ways where you can implement that gold standard. You can implement that complete collaboration, that teaming within this framework or within this way that we truly believe is important. And through that training, right, being able to apply it, being able to think about how I do it within my ecosystem of my peers, my administration, my community, and my students, having that knowledge and that training to be able to then kind of back it up a little bit, depending on the school that you're in, depending on the peers that you have, starting smaller with those who are excited about it, and then kind of going from there, right? And so there's no perfect way to do it. But if we can train our teachers to really experience the power of collaboration and teaming, they will be more willing and advocating for it when they get into their schools. And I think the second part to that is, as a teacher educator, we use teaming as a way to address recruitment and retention, right? And also the competition in the market for teacher education programs. So we look at reimagining how we train our educators with those ways of, you know, what do we do? What do we need to create during those first few years that are so important to keep them in the profession? And what do they need that will more likely, right, allow for them to persist? And so providing them with those tangible ways and looking at not only what teachers report is keeping them, but also what do they report that connect with higher levels of teacher satisfaction. And those do correlate with satisfaction of relationships with peers, administrators, families, as well as that freedom to implement curriculum. So within the context of teaming, it really is a way to not only increase that ability to persist, but also create and thrive in community and not feel alone. Even if you are teaching alone, right, at that most basic level of, we know there are realities that we have to work within a system to transform a system, to transform a culture, right? But being able to start to cultivate those relationships, start to cultivate that community, how can we team on this? It's not necessarily the frameworks and the methodologies that we would love all of our teachers to do, but just that little seed, planting that little seed, will get more and more teachers to do it. And then, you know, the privilege of being able to work with teacher candidates who have an idea of what education should be or what they would like it to be, to then, you know, work within that construct and that conflict of what they maybe have experienced in the past to then say, well, this makes sense. How can I do it? And so these are really factors that I think we believe not only, you know, at the systematic level address those factors of what they need or what they don't necessarily want, right? With teachers who have persisted in the field, but also create ways of thinking and doing as well as just being in a community at large.
And that's wickedly important. There's so much conversation around the world around how we effectively, I'm going to use the word transform. I know that there's a lot of debate around that. So how we actually transform the current educational system to be one that is very, very learner-centered and extremely community-driven and community-based. And how do we effectively translate all of that into deep student engagement? Because that student engagement is key to solving so many local educational issues, chronic absenteeism, teacher retention, so on and so forth, right? We know that it's all connected. And so, Erin, what are you thinking about that?
Yeah, you know, something that comes to mind, I'm a social studies teacher at heart, right? And so really within the methods of social studies, but this is for all of our teachers, when we talk about the times, these contentious times that we are teaching in and through, right? When we place that autonomy, that agency, that learning on the student within the frameworks that we establish within our classrooms, those are ways to teach our content, our curriculum in ways that we know are important, that we've been trained as professional educators within our content to teach, but also address those worries that teachers are teaching it in one way and one way only, and I don't agree with that. We're putting that agency back on those students, and we're providing them with the tools, strategies, and materials to be able to do that. And so not only do we see the data that says, yep, these are the things that keep teachers in the profession, but it also is a way to increase that student-centered learning with the teacher as the facilitator to really teach through contentious times.
100% agree with you. Yeah. So, Nick, bring us home on this idea.
Well, I think at the core, one of the exercises that we describe in the book is a strength-based exercise, and it begins with, what do you, as a group of adults, educators, need to be successful? And get a group to identify normally about 8 items or so. If the list gets too long, it's too hard to remember and hard to take action on those things. But those same questions could be of a group of young people. You know, what does your team need to be successful? And get them to identify those items. And then we take them through the 4-quadrant diagram, which is to say, where are you on that simple spectrum? Are you at the very beginning? Are you just drinking from the fire hose and accelerating your awareness? Are you building credibility? Are you developing insight? Or do you have wisdom to share? Where are you on those 4 things? And what we've found is that when the group uses that tool, that they gel as a team more quickly because they are each given that opportunity to speak to what they believe their strengths are and where they may see challenges. Now, another thing that we have discovered that is in a group that has a low level of trust, that people will tend to say, I'm a wisdom sharer in every realm. I've got, you know, nothing to hide. I'm great at everything. But with high levels of trust, people are more likely to say, I don't think I have wisdom to share in this realm, whether it's technology integration or recruiting community partners or whatever it might be. And yet it's the teammates who will step up and say, no, Mar, you're really great at that. You know, can you help me grow in that realm, et cetera? And so there are some preparatory things that are helpful to do before doing that core exercise. But that core exercise often then gives that team that framework of, well, we all agree that these are our kind of our basic success criteria, and we acknowledge that our whole team needs to grow in this realm, or individually we need to grow in different realms. And thank goodness, we right here on our team, we have the resources to do that. We don't need to wait for another professional learning session scheduled 4 months from now or something. We can be doing this day after day. And that's one of the key things, I think, that we've come across.
Are you ready to join the movement to revolutionize education? Stay tuned for the full unveiling of my forthcoming book, Hacking School, 5 Strategies to Link Learning to Life, where we'll dive deeper into these topics and unlock key strategies to educational transformation. If you want to stay in the know, sign up for notifications at pastfoundation.org/hackingschool.
Absolutely. So Mar, when you think about what Nick was just talking about, one of my curiosities for you is, how does the prep work that goes into being ready to be an effective team play out?
Well, I would say, let's start with you, with I. So, first of all, it's about, you know, getting to know you a little bit more as the team in yourself, in ourselves. Yeah, as what are the strengths? Nick was making reference, you know, to those strengths that we all have and those skills that we are good at and we are ready to share. So let's start with positive, you know, things first. And from there, we know that learning is social. Yeah, so that's basic. So what better, you know, than to find or to have the opportunity to meet with other colleagues or other, you know, offer in the case of students and learners, let's offer those possibilities for them to gather together and to create a team. Yeah, and this is where we start. You know, so for that prep, we can think of different types of activities, different types of strategies, techniques that we can use, especially to start. First of all, start with building positive relationships. You know, that's one of the key things. And for those, for example, we are sharing different types of strategies that people can try, you know, because it's not about sharing one strategy that suits, you know, everyone. But okay, the more strategies we have in our toolbox, the better, because then we'll know when we can use one or another, depending on the team members, you know, we are collaborating with. So types of strategies like, and some things are very basic, just try the yes and, yeah, that comes from improv, an improv technique. And it's so easy to start incorporating, you know, when you are collaborating with other mates, yeah. And there are little things that can be made. So you start building those types of relationships that will lead, you know, to a positive atmosphere where you feel trusted, where you feel that you can, even if you feel vulnerable, that trust and honesty in the group will allow you to make mistakes and to put them, you know, on the table and to say, okay, I acknowledge that I did this, how can I grow from that, or how can we grow from that? Yeah. So I think, and we, you know, we've discussed a lot about these type of strategies that we can implement, we can start practicing to be able to create that safe environment. Yeah, we talk about psychological safety as well. And that's key, yeah, to feel in a learning environment where you can make mistakes, but you can learn from there and you can grow from there together with your team. And that's actually a very, one of the key essences, you know, and key things that we need to bear in mind when building those teams, right? And that can make a difference, you know, from a group. We had this discussion as well, like, but are you referring to a group or is it a team, you know? So what makes the difference? Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So Erin, can you sort of share for our listeners, most of whom are practicing educators or future educators, folks that are in these education prep programs that we see around the world, help them understand a key takeaway. So, you know, when you worked on this project, what was the singular thing from you wearing that hat around, hey, I am trying to get new people into the world of education to persist, to love it, to engage with kids. So what was a key factor for you that said, not only do we need to do this work, but we need to write this book. And this is a takeaway that I want everybody to carry with them.
We need educators and we need good educators. We need ones who are, I mean, whether it's to reinvigorate or to recruit, right? And to be able to tap into that empowerment of that motivation and why I want to do the work, why I'm going into the profession. And I think that there are so many different ways, as Mara says, to engage in this work. And we talk about different methodologies. There's no one methodology, no one strategy that allows for this. But I think for myself, when we think about the importance of, you know, coherent delivery models, right? Those universal ways that we come together and learn and really provide those learning opportunities for our students. That can be difficult work. It's a heavy lift to do on your own. And if you can really feel and experience the way that you can do it with other people in tangible ways that doesn't feel like, well, now I'm trying to do this collaboration piece, but I'm still having to do all the other stuff on my own. And so now it just feels like more and extra, and I'm now getting stretched way too thin, and I'm just going to do it myself, right? I'm just going to do it myself. And that's just the tried and true. And I'm going to go do that. And that's what seems easier. But once you really, truly can tap into this work, you never really turn back. And in fact, you're the one that is the advocate for it, right? You're the one who's pushing that train down the track that's saying, hey, just a little bit more, just a little bit more. And now I'm going to get my families involved and I'm going to get my administrator involved. And that shared leadership is extremely powerful in keeping teachers in the profession and persisting. And so it all comes together for me in this way that there's no one way, but the minute that you start to experience it, you realize that this is it's a lighter lift, it's a more enjoyable lift, and your motivation and commitment will increase because your self-efficacy increases with collective efficacy. And that's what this work does.
Yeah. And I agree, a shout out, because we see the exact same thing. You know, we have educators who've been in the classroom for 5 years, 10 years, 3 years, but we hear consistently, right, even 25 and 30-year educators who, once they embrace teaching differently, being the facilitator, shifting everything to being very, very student-centered based on agency and so on and so forth, that it's hard to make the transition, or it can be, but I will never go back.
Right.
Right. We hear that over and over and over again. So I appreciate your thinking about that very much, Erin. So Nick, same question to you to bring the conversation home. You know, I've had the privilege of working with you on a number of things over the last 18 months or so. And I'm always impressed by the passion that you bring to trying to solve problems. And I can also attest that I've never once seen you say, let me fix this. It's always, well, how could we think about this? So very, very collaborative. And so same final question to you. What's the power, the big giant takeaway that our educators that are out there listening to this, what do you want them to walk away with?
I think at its core, that working as a team is a great way to recruit non-traditionally prepared educators. And if the credential is held at the team level, that other voice who has a passion for connecting with kids or connecting with the community or taking on problems can be a part of something, even if they're still studying with Erin to complete their credentialing. And I think that that makes the whole process more powerful. And the potential of a young person who's excited by that extra voice that otherwise wouldn't be in the room opens new doors. And I think that when we fall into the trap that you have to have gone the conventional route to becoming an educator, there are voices that disappear. And those voices are probably what the world needs, whether the voices of young people or the voices of adults. I suspect that those are the voices we need to take on the challenges around us.
Yeah. Any other thoughts to add to Nick? I want to add something.
Yeah, I just think also when we're thinking about the ways that we do what we do with our students, right? This isn't just teaming with your peers or your, you know, your administration or your families. This is also how you're establishing what you do with your students, right? So you practice it within your community, but then you implement it with your students. And so that student-centered student agency, they are also practicing these shifts of collaboration and teaming. And they really are the ones who are going to, you know, practice these to then carry them on and carry them forward. And so really it's kind of that training and cultivating at all different levels that then, you know, maybe it's a less of an ask as our students get older and they decide what they truly want to do in the world and how they want to do it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I love that. Mara, take us home. What are your final thoughts?
Yeah, actually, I wanted to take, you know, this nurturing, cultivating, you know, that Erin was mentioning. It's not only about students, you know, we need to think about it from the micro level to the macro, you know, levels. And that's I think that's key, yeah, because one of the things that educators and school leaders want to see happening is learning happening between students who are working together, collaborating together in real teams. But how about educators? How about the school leaders themselves? How about our community members, right? So one of the key sections that we also share is, okay, how do we model as school leaders working together, as educators working together in teams, how can we model that to our learners? And we know that modeling is one of the 8 forces that Ron Richard mentions, you know, in cultures of thinking to truly transform schools, right? So I think that modeling needs to start, as I was saying, let's start with us being, you know, the adults. And that's like, oh, yeah, adults do it. We learners can do it too. And we are going to do it, you know. So I think that's a key factor that we need to bear in mind. And this is like my call to action to every single, not every single educator in the world, but a school leader and any other agent, you know, from the educational communities, that they embrace that teaming, you know, and releasing this, just leaving, you know, those fears that we may have and that control that we may have. You know, it's like, no, I can do it. I will do it. I know I can do it very good, but I don't know how it's going to happen and how that, what can look like if I do it with my team. And maybe we'll get slower. And that's one of the things as well. It's not about being the only one getting there, the first one, but getting together and maybe even farther.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Let's get everybody across that finish line, right? 100%. I love that. So thank you, all of you, so much for taking time out of your day to share about Team Ed. We will make sure in the show notes that there are links so that folks can grab their copy. I encourage everybody to do so. But Nick, Erin, and Mar, thank you. Thank you so much for spending time with us today.
Thanks for having us. Many thanks, indeed.
Thank you again.
Thank you for joining us for Learning Unboxed, a conversation about teaching, learning, and the future of work. I want to thank my guests and encourage you all to be part of the conversation. Meet me on social media at Annalise Corbin and join me next time as we stand up, step back, and lean in to reimagine education.